First, I want to thank the organizers for giving me this chance to speak. And second, also thank you for the very enjoyable meeting here. So this is a feature film. There's a pointer. Well, maybe I'll just use the... Can you see this pointer here? So that I can still face the audience instead. And can you hear me in the back? So this is a feature film, so that should be a synopsis. There's four dangerous physicists called Carol, Mikhail, Pavel, and Jonathan. And they're so dangerous that the government decided to put them in captivity in two separate jail rooms. I mean, you can't put them together. And so what they're trying to do is that they try to secretly agree on an escape plan. But then they're separated by this wall, so they have to talk over the wall and be overheard by the jail guard. But then one day they discover underneath their jail bed some quantum states that appear to be jointly shared between the two cells. And they suspect that this might have been created by the previous guys who escaped. But they're not very sure, because it can be a trap set by the jail guard. I mean, these are smart physicists. Crazy as this, but they what they try to do. The first thing they try is to run 2KD based on entanglement distillation. They talk over the wall. But they failed. This thing turns out to be appear to be not distillable. So the movie started by asking, like, would they manage to escape, or what can they do about this situation? They're not very sure what they are. But they have suspected that this may be useful for escaping. Because apparently the previous jailer, the human people have escaped. So this is what the next 45 minutes will be about, if I have that much to talk altogether. And the result has been written up in some of these papers, not important detail. What's also important is that I want to thank a few other people who all happen to be in this room for their early participation of the project. Matthias Cristando, Stephanie, who's the chair, Andrea Finder, and also we will have a guest appearance in the movie by Renata Reina. And some other relevant material, since this is on record, our affiliations and our funding agents. Very important. And unlike what Daniel has done, there's this fortunate and unfortunate thing. I will run out of time. I won't be able to finish before sunset. So what I will do instead is to make this talk as boring and spoiled as possible. The spoiler of the movie is to, you know, kind of know the answer at the before you see the movie, so it's no fun. But what I will do is to select just random, like, just some chapters and make the result as trivial and obvious and as... give as much hindsight as I can, so that the whole result looks totally obvious, if not stupid. I will first talk a little bit about what twisted EBITs are. Briefly recap, this protocol partly based on E92, partly based on entanglement purification protocol that can be used for QKD by Hong Kong and Hong Chao, which I'll cut and paste into another part of a proof by Shaw Pascoe into that. So it's a weird protocol that no one ever used, but it's useful for proving things. Proofs are different from using things, so we learned that from yesterday. And finally, from that point onwards, it's very obvious that it's just a single twist that we need to get security proof for QKD based on twisted EBITs instead. And the single twist is already given to us by Renato, so it's all very lucky. The only fortunate things in this movie. And finally, I'll conclude with the fact that we can have quantum key distribution over channels that has no quantum capacity. That's the plan. And this is just a cartoon of what we think about quantum key distribution, that we're very comfortable with this picture, so it's green. If Alice and Bob know that they share EBITs, then life is easy and nice. They just need to measure in computation basis in their own laboratory and generate a key. And they know that it's secure if they know that they have EBITs. What's very nice about entanglement purification is that, I don't know how much I should go over things that you might have seen before, and if it turns out to be too obvious, just stop me. What's nice about entanglement purification is that you can start with something totally unknown, the state rho with a question mark on it. Whether it's good or bad doesn't matter in a big cloud. But after the entanglement purification procedure, like that involves only local operations and public discussion, if it is good to start with, then with good probability, you will end up with some e-bits. Of course, with some probability, you still abort the protocol. I mean, put up with inefficiencies in life. But now, if the state turns out to be bad, then you should not have been able to extract e-bits. With really, really high probability, you abort the protocol. That's the nice thing about entanglement purification. You don't need to know what you have to start with. You run the protocol, worst comes to worst, you run with inefficiencies, but you will hardly ever run in a situation that you have something bad and you think that you have e-bit and generate in secure key. Is this part, is the statement clear? What this type of QKD protocol are alike? Now everyone agree that this is secure and nice, and bridging from unknown to known, just shrink it so that I can fit everything in here. And so there's another nice little thing that we can play with in QKD, is that here, the whole point about doing entanglement distillation, like with all this hard work to distill entanglement, is to measure out a classical key at the very end of the day in the previous protocol. That turns out to be, of course, an overkill because we just want the classical key at the end. And this is why we... I forgot to motivate this talk by saying that almost all the non-security proof up to a year ago has been related to entanglement purification. In the following sense, you can have some other protocol. I'm trying to relate the entanglement purification protocol to the other type that we call prepared measure here. And it's through this intermediate step that turns out to be more useful for our talk here. Instead of doing all this hard work, create the e-bits and measure out the key, the measurement could have been commuted through the purification protocol and be applied to your unknown state right at the beginning. And then you generate something we call the raw key. And what happened to this local local discussion and so on is that you can see from some of the earlier work that it turned into privacy amplification and error correction of the raw key that you generate. So if you're willing to accept this as proven and secure, then I can proceed. So it's a very nice trick that we pretend to distill and we don't distill. But then the security of this new protocol is as good as if you have done the other one. So that's the idea behind this reduction. That's mostly written up in the paper by Sean Preskill back in 2000. And furthermore, now if you accept that this is a good way to do QKD, the other way is also very good. If instead of a shared state, Alice and Bob actually have a shared channel, they have a channel from Alice to Bob, that's insecure. Therefore, there's another question mark here with the channel symbol N. The bucket. The idea is that if Alice, maybe I should use the board. Now, in the other framework, they share a quantum channel. So what Alice can do is to prepare a shared state. She has her half. And then send Bob's half through the channel. That's insecure. We don't trust it. And at the end, this is their shared state. So we relate the second the middle picture to the last one there. And now if we use the middle picture that we already trust and feel comfortable with, Alice and Bob will both make some measurement on the state. Say Alice would get some k here, some value k. But then you can commute the measurement back here, as if it has happened here. And so there will be a corresponding state, psi k here, that Alice could have sent through the channel, which would not affect what Bob has, conditioned on the fact that Alice got this state. So it means that the last two pictures differ only by what Alice is doing. Bob has the same procedure. And in particular, it tells you how to convert a protocol that starts with some shared state to one that uses a channel, and vice versa. Alice just needs to generate these values k by tossing a coin. Say this occurs with probability pk, so then what she can do is to draw k according to this distribution and create this state psi k, the signal state, send it through the channel, and then the rest of the protocol will be exactly the same as the middle one. And so we also know how to deal with that if we know how to deal with the middle picture. So this is the idea in the work that's based on distilling EBIT. Now, so we are asking a different question because of this paper by the Hodeskis and Jonathan Oppenheim, who find out that every quantum state that will give you a security at the end has a certain form that's related to the EBIT, but quite a lot more general. And naturally, the question to ask is that can we pretend to distill EBIT in this picture and be able to obtain a protocol that will be known to be secure as a QKD protocol? So this is what we're trying to solve here in this talk. And of course, once we get the middle picture to go through, then we try to generalize the channel case. So this is the synopsis in some gory detail. And now I'm running a third time in even more detail. So the green part again, a quantum key, we can define it as a shared bipartite quantum state, and if it is known and if it's known to Alice and Bob and is already possessed by them, they already share the state, then they can measure locally to generate a secure key. Then we just call this state a quantum key. The EBIT is an example. I want to be a little more careful here. Just the measurement turns the quantum state into a classical state, and when we talk about a classical state, then who has the purification? So just to be very specific, I would say that the purification for this in this case is in some secure local garbage guarded by Alice and Bob or by a trusted friend. As long as it's not with Eve, we're fine. That's what we mean by being able to measure out a key from a quantum state. Just a symbol for N EBIT. I call entanglement EBIT in this talk. by habit. But the most general quantum key turned out to be it's related to the EBIT, but it's not the same. It has the form that you take N EBITs here. You take N EBITs, and you take any arbitrary state shared between Alice, Bob, and Eve. And you apply a joint operation on A prime, B prime. That is promised to be first unitary and second diagonal in A and B. In some basis, the computation basis, that will be used to define how to measure out the key from AB at the end. So this diagonal basis is defined by how you make the final measurement to generate the key from the state. And this is the most general thing that will give you a key. So it's an only if condition. If you share this state, then if Alice and Bob share this state, then they can generate a key. And vice versa, if there exists a state that will give them a good key at the end, then it has this form. Intuitively, it's quite nice to see why this should be the case. The measurement commutes with the tracing operation because they're diagonal in the same basis. And the measurement, you can imagine it being applied here instead. Do I have another one to move it up? No. And also, so you can commute the measurement here, which will give you a key, as if you have measured out the N EBIT. Furthermore, this tracing only affects A, B, A prime, B prime, and does not affect E. So whether it has been applied or not, after you measure out the key, would not affect Eve. So it's in this way that you can see these states are giving you secure key. The converse, that all the state that will give you a secure key is harder to see, and I'm not going to show it here. The fun thing about this, I'll tell you why we're concerned about twisted EBIT later. There are a lot of fun things about them, fun facts about them. But back to the case when we don't know about the state, when we're worried about what the state is, we have no idea what they are in terms of distribution of this key. As mentioned before, the brute force method is to first distill entanglement because we already know that it works. We don't need to worry about what the state we have to start with. And so to recap the protocol, a first specific one, the first step is that the sure step is that they share this state by somehow they share this N bipartite system, so their N system on Alice's side and N system on Bob's side, the joint state rho question mark. There's a very funny purple step that's only in our imagination. It need not be done. And whether you do it or not will not affect your security, but it will affect the proof quite a bit, makes it much easier. Is that the end system has been measured in a bell basis, so they share a bell mixture in some, and they share a mixture of bell states. These may not be ID, they can be very arbitrary in some sense. And in real life, you don't need to measure it out, it can be in arbitrary superposition between the end bell states. But you can imagine it, it will not affect your security. That's the point. And then the next step is to select 2M out of the N system. M is typically much smaller than N. You have to select them randomly. So Alice and Bob can talk publicly, so share randomly is not an issue here. And on M of them, you try to estimate how many... Once we think about these as bell states, then there are only two types of errors that we need to worry about, the X error and the Z error. The X, Y, Z are poly matrices. We want to estimate how many Z errors has occurred to the N system, and we can try to estimate that number by random sampling M out of N system. And effectively, what we're doing is that we're measuring this non-local operator, sigma x tensor, sigma x, and ask how many times it come out to be a plus 1, how many times it come out to be a minus 1. The best thing we look at has always give a plus 1 outcome, and when a Z error has occurred, you will get a minus 1 instead. This is how we count and estimate the number of Z errors. But the nice thing about this non-local operator is that it is a product operator. So you can actually measure, you can measure it in a very local way by measuring X on one side and measuring an X on the other side on the same system. Multiply classically the two classical outcomes, and that will give you the same classical outcome as if you have measured XX jointly on the two systems. So product observables, even though they're non-local, has very simple mechanism to be estimated, and that's what makes them very nice. Similar with the Z, with the X error, that can be estimated by measuring sigma Z tensor sigma Z. And then once you have the estimate on the error rate, you apply entanglement purification protocol, and if your estimate is good, then your outcome will be very, very close to a singlet. That's the comment here. And then you measure the EB to get a key. So that's the brute force method we can do QKD here. And if we all agree that this is secure, then I'll move on to the next modification. Has anyone disagree that this is secure? Good. Proof by intimidation. And the next step is to make sure that we really don't do the entanglement purification. It's too much to do. And the idea is just to permute the measurement back there. So we just try to for the purpose of this proof, we push it back after the error estimation step, and to say that the first step after the error estimation is to measure the rest of the state that has not been in the test system, to just get some noisy key, the raw key, and then apply error correction and privacy amplification in the correct order as Renato has also mentioned in his talk. Like, there's some good procedure that we know how to do it. And we can also get this procedure from the original entanglement purification protocol. It is of a certain type. And then again, we know that this will give us a key that's secure because the security is the same as the previous slide. And now let's ask why we care about changing all this nice framework to twisted edits. Back to the case when Alice and Bob know that they have the state. There are two types of twisted EBITs that we're particularly fascinated with. First, there are clean twisted EBITs that has very little entanglement. That has very little distillable entanglement. But clearly, these are quantum key states by definition. So they will give you one key bit, say, per unit of the state. If we try to force ourselves to go through entanglement distillation, we're throwing away most of the things that we could have distilled, like we could have extracted in the known scenario. Say, if they actually know that they have the twisted EBIT, they should just measure out the key. They should never try to distill the entanglement. In the unknown case, they don't know what to do. So this is one example in which you see that distilling entanglement is kind of silly sometimes. The second case is more striking because it's a matter of whether you can or cannot do it. It's not just a matter of the key rate. There are some of these twisted EBITs that you can add a little noise and make it totally undistillable. They're bound and tangled. But then they clearly have non-zero key rate. One of our examples has like 0.02 key bits per copy of the state. I mean, it's a good number. We should try to get the key out of these states. But clearly, entanglement distillation will not work. In the scenario when they know they have no idea whether they indeed share the state or not. And this come up because, say, they have done process tomography on the channel. They know roughly speaking this is what the channel would do. But then they're not sure if at any certain time, like maybe there will be 1 or 2 days when they're not really checking everything, if we could have taken the channel away and replaced it by something else. So this is the scenario that's actually making sense. So we're asking the question here, can we have protocol that's based on distillation of twisted EDs? Of course, again, we never want to really distill them, but at least we should try to pretend to distill them in some QKD-like protocols. That's known to be secure. And this is the question we're trying to ask. Is this cartoon? The only thing I want to say is that the upper pictures and the lower pictures differ only by one basis change defined by the tracing operator. That's the only difference between tracer EBIT and EBIT. Well, there are more systems there, but just a change of basis in some sense. And so at least if we really force ourselves to distill tracer EBIT, there's one thing we can do. It's trivial, silly, and forbidden, but we can do it, at least on paper, mathematically. It's for Alice and Bob to change back to the regular basis and do regular entanglement purification. And then change your basis back again. By definition, that's distilling twisted EBITs. The only problem, I mean, besides being trivial and silly, is that they cannot really do this operation twisting and untwisting. It's global on A, B, A prime, B prime. So in real life, they cannot do that. But mathematically, they can. Better still, they should run it on the other protocol that does not really distill to save work. But we know that if they do this mathematically, the key that comes out will be secure, just that they cannot do it in real life. So we may as well try to write down the protocol. This is the original entanglement purification protocol with the cut and paste that they don't really do the distillation. And then we just insert these two steps to make it a twisted EBIT distillation protocol. And we know that the final key will be secure from all the previous boring discussion. There's no surprise. Everything is lucky, is fortunate. And then if you stare at this for a moment, it's forbidden, but then you can move these operations around and commute it. For example, if you commute between these two steps, you're imagining something slightly different only. You're just imagining that the system has been measured in the twisted bell basis instead of the original bell basis. There's nothing forbidding us from doing it. And in fact, it does not change the security of the protocol. I just want to, it's the first subtle point, I have to admit, but I will delay discussions about this point to offline. And similarly, we know that we don't really need to undo the twisting because everything is classical and diagonal in the computation basis. So this commuting back here is trivial. And now we're only sandwiching the error estimation of the regular, like of the XX and ZZ. Like we're sandwiching the estimation of the X and the Z errors between these twisting and untwisting operations. That's the only thing different. In the framework when we try to or pretend to distill twisted EBITs instead of regular EBITs. And clearly, the only thing that's different is that we're estimating the expectation of a slightly different operator. They're both given by this form, just straightforward algebra. This one is even better because ZZ commutes with the tracing operation, so nothing different has to be done. And the only difference from the previous case is in the estimation of the phase error. We call it the twisted phase error. We have to estimate the expectation of this observable on the M test system instead of just the straightforward sigma x tensor sigma x. We don't have that product structure anymore, so we're a little stuck. So this is the solution. There's no unfortunate part. It's only fortunate. So we try to estimate this object. This is the reduced state on that M test system. And when we say that we try to have an estimation of how many ones versus minus one, it means that we're just trying to estimate this average, the trace of that thing on the operator on the different system from 1 to the m, trivially on the other system. That's the expectation that we're trying to get to, divide by m at the end. And just to write that observable all once more. And again, mathematically, no one can forbid us from rewriting it as a linear combination of product observables. For example, we can write it as a linear combination over all the possible Pauli matrices that forms a basis for matrices. In other words, this step comes from the fact that we can have a basis for matrices that's in product form. And the idea here is almost begging itself that we should just divide that M test system into T parts when we have T terms there and estimate each of the OIs on one part. This idea begs itself. I mean, there's no other way we want to do it. I mean, there's no other solution that we think will be sensible. The only question is, like, why do we think it should work? How accurate should it be if we think it works and so on? And that's when you need the friends. We end up, we're stuck on that problem for a while, and then Renato told us this result that we find totally fitting to our question here. So the idea is that the procedure I just described, simple, straightforward, unclear why it should work, turns out to work really well because of the quantum definiteness theorem, the exponential form. What happened is that the state, this N test system, it comes from random sampling of N systems. So there's the symmetry that's already given to us. And therefore, when we just look at those systems itself, we can of course look at those systems itself because we don't measure the others. It has the form that looks like a complex combination of tensor power states on that M system. Now note that I put the tensor M to the subscript. So these are not exactly tensor power states. They behave like them in terms of in the following sense that I'll just say. It's tensor power like if we try to measure, we make individual measurements on each of the system, on each of these M systems, they are all the same measurement of the same observable. Then our measurement statistics will be very closely governed by the Chernoff bound. And this is what we want. To be slightly more precise, this almost tensor power state is on M system is like really like a tensor, you can write it as a tensor power, it's in a support of N minus R. R is some parameter you have to pick on N minus R of those systems. And then on the other R system, you don't worry about what the state is. And therefore, the measurement statistic will come out right up to that R system that can give you something funny. Furthermore, if you look at just part of that M system, say if you take a further M prime out of those, it will give you the same similar statistics and similar Chernoff bound would hold. So here the idea is that this is what we're trying to estimate. And this is how we break it down into product observables that we have some idea how to do by public discussion. These two parts are related. So this is the distribution I can get. This is the outcome I can get by directly measuring. Imagine that I can measure this observable O on each of the test systems. This kind of estimate we trust. This is very close to this expression because the state had that form, and because the Chernoff-like bound will hold. This is mathematical equivalence, and on each of these O sub I, I can estimate them quite accurately, and then causally put the result back together to get the estimate, and get this indirect estimation. And again, the two are very similar. And so what it says is that what you could have done by directly measuring how many times you get a plus one eigenvalue and minus one eigenvalue by directly measuring this observable O on each of the M system will be very similar to what we're proposing to do here by cutting up the M test system into T parts, estimate each of the OIs on each part, and costly put the result back together. Have I lost everyone yet? Or just very boring, yeah? Too obvious. And so if you accept that, then we're all done. The estimate is good. So your process simplification and error correction will all be good. Your key will be secure. And that's the entire story. There's some funny remarks to make, really cute little observations. If you remember what we're really trying to do, we're making estimate on the expectation of this product observable, OI. But these are just the basis, a product basis for matrices on a bipartite system. Has nothing to do with the tracing operator. The dependence on the tracing operators are the alpha I's. Has nothing to do with the quantum measurements. What it means is that we don't even need to know what the tracing operation is up front when we try to perform the QKD protocol. The quantum measurements can be done without even thinking about it. You go in the laboratory, make the measurements, take the data, and then plug it into the computer and optimize over the alphas. You don't need to have any assumption of what this tracing operator is up in advance. Pick the best one that you can afford computationally on the cost of computer and get the minimal the error rate. Anything you get, you can use. It is all a matter of interpretation. Here, the idea about twisted e-bit is that you can interpret some of the noise that you can see in your system as being harmless. It's a way to characterize harmless versus harmful noise. And what we're doing here is that you can make the measurement, do this data analysis, and pick out as much of the noise you're seeing as possible and call it harmless. And run your process amplification based on the part that you cannot deal with. The other thing to mention is that since everything is related to entanglement distillation at the end, even though the state may not be distillable, the security parameter is directly given by the singular fidelity of the entanglement purification protocol. And this parameter has been studied before with respect to the security parameter in the universal composable framework. And they're very closely related. I think it's just a square root or 1/4 power or something. There's nothing crazy when we translate from one security parameter to the next, which means that whatever we get from this protocol will be directly composable in the universal composable framework. Finally, the punchline, to do quantum key distribution without a channel that have quantum capacity. It comes straightforwardly from the relation. There's nothing to iron out. You take that, you find one of these noisy, twisted e-bit states, make many copies. These are bound entangled states. There's no entanglement. You write it as if it is a state coming out from sending half of a maximum entangled state through a channel. The state would directly tell you what the channel is. It uniquely determines what the channel should look like. And this is a channel which is provably entanglement binding, I forget the exact term, which means that the channel cannot be used to generate entanglement from product states. So these are channels that have no quantum capacity. But you can use it to generate some of these noisy bound entangled twisted e-bits and be able to extract a key out of it, even though you don't trust the channel, not the state. Follow straightforwardly from prior work. There's not even anything that we need to iron out. Kind of funny. I think this is from that example that we have with per copy of the state, we get a channel that has 2 qubit input, 2 qubit output. You can get roughly 0.02 bits of key per use of the channel. The funny thing about that example is that we realized the signal state we use and what Alice and Bob should do will be exactly like the 6-day protocol, at least for the initial signaling and the measurement. is only in the data processing and in the estimation of the phase error rate that deviates from the original analysis, giving us the difference between whether you can or cannot do QKD on that channel. So it's all in the analysis and interpretation and imagination. It's really nice. And I'll finish early with a question. We haven't resolved this issue. We just have examples of channels that has no quantum capacity, but you can perform QKD on it. I think one of the questions we want to address is, can all channels that's not separable, I mean, it's called entanglement binding, be used for QKD or not? It's something that we don't know. We may be able to find examples. Sometimes we know, yes, sometimes we don't know, but we don't have any clear characterization what exactly gives rise to the ability to do quantum key distribution. If you give me a channel, then how can I characterize it? Clearly, it is. It has nothing to do with the ability to communicate noiselessly. And it has something to do with information disturbance. But this is so strong in effect that even with a lot of noise in your channel, you can still do it. But otherwise, we don't see a clean, simple characterization. Unlike the case when you actually know, say, the characterization, when you have this twisted e-bit that can give you a key, it's very clean and simple, it's really elegant. We don't have anything similar in the channel case when it's untrusted. So this is a big question that we're puzzling over. And there are some other questions that are a lot less relevant, like what if we don't have tensor power twisting and so on and so forth. But those are a lot less relevant, and I'll stop here. Thank you very much. I have scribbled the same question somewhere in my notebook. And also the other result that he has with Professor John Pascu, that you can phase randomization will help you in some of these QKD protocol when you use a coherent state. The fact that you locally induce noise. I should also mention that there has been some prior work that's known that you apply noise locally and it will help in your key rate. And they can be rephrased in terms of twisted e-bit distillation. There's a result by, I think, Renato and Jisan and Kras, that you can have local noise adding to the system and improve the key rate. And it's within the framework of distilling e-bits. And there are more recent examples by Glenn Smith and Joe Renee. But I'm not sure about the decoy state, the exact formalism.
Well, well, actually, because it's related to entanglement distillation, because you